Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 789. It's the 31st of May, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Tony Gilby, Managing Director of Talou Energy, TLOU, and Tony talks about the appointment of a contractor to undertake the seismic survey for both its 100% owned Lesedi CBM project and the adjacent Mamba permit. Also on the podcast, Kieran Mazaria, CEO of Cadence, that's KDNC, goes over some of the highlights from their final results for the year ended the 31st December 2016. Plus, I also have John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about Gemfields, that's GEM, and Bushveld Minerals, BMN. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the most liked RNSs in the last day too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tony Gilby, Managing Director of Talou Energy. There's a bit of chat over the pronunciation of that, but I think, as you said, Tony, thanks for coming on, by the way.
Very good, Justin. Very nice to be here in Talou or Talou. Both are perfectly acceptable.
I've heard Claw or Claw as well, Energy, so but we know what it is. Ticker there, TLOU, and you are the managing director. You've had some news out today, which is good positive news, taking the project forward. We'll get to that in a bit. But for anyone out there, Tony, not quite aware of what you're all about there, can you give a brief summary as to what this business is all about?
Certainly, Justin. We're a company that is extracting clean gas from coal in Botswana. We have over 8,000 square kilometres, 100% owned. We have the only gas reserves in the entire country of Botswana. We have an approved environmental impact statement for upstream development. We have a power development partner and a government-sanctioned 100 megawatt power project, which we're working on now.
Yes, and so it looks, because the potential there is huge. As you know, Botswana, like you say there, it's they have, you know, a sort of electricity problem. Well, in fact, most of sub-Saharan Africa do, and they need more electricity, and it looks like they're behind you, the government, for producing coal bed methane to power a power station. And so essentially, when are you looking? I mean, at the moment, of course, it's, you've been there for over 10 years, but you're getting closer to that point of producing gas. So when, on a timescale-wise, are you aiming to produce that gas into a power station, Tony?
Well, the timetable suggests approximately 2019, so two short years away. Justin, we may be able to bring that forward based on application of a technology to transport the gas via trucking, for example, for the first gas to power, but generally for the project we're working on, a two-year time frame.
Yeah, and like I said, first and foremost, Botswana is the target here for this this power, but there is a shortfall, isn't it, across the whole southern African region. So you're hoping that you will also be able to supply, and is it the case of once it's in the grid, you can supply anyway? Is that the case?
That is pretty well the case. The Southern African Power Pool connects several countries in Southern Africa, as the name suggests, and it's all a world-class power grid, and any company can export and import power, or wheel power, as it's called, throughout that grid. Now, I was only reading an article today whereby the African Development Bank is looking at investing some $12 billion into getting additional electricity into sub-Saharan Africa over the next a short period of time. Now, that's because over 600 million Africans in sub-Saharan Africa don't have access to electricity. So it is a big problem. There's enormous demand, absolutely enormous demand. And we view Talou as part of the solution to that issue of a lack of electrical power in sub-Saharan Africa, and specifically the Southern African Power Pool, and even more specifically within Botswana. So we can use our our clean gas. We can extract it from the reservoir only about 500 metres below the surface, and we can convert that to electricity and get that electricity into the grid. So an enormous local, semi-regional and regional requirement for our product. We see essentially an unlimited market for our product. Justin?
Yeah, well, like you say there, you know, there's a massive demand for this. So, excuse the pun, but the current is going in your direction, in your way. You're swimming with the current here. And and so let's go back a few steps before you get to that level in 2019. Of course, you have to sort of prove up the gas reserves and resources, and that's what the RNS is about today. So you conducted a seismic survey, and you've appointed a contractor. Take us through the detail, please, Tony, of this, if you would.
Indeed. This announcement today underscores the progress we're steadily making in the background to bring the gas-to-power objective to a reality. And we've talked about the enormous upside once we're into that power grid, and we can then start to expand our project. So the very first part of that plan, if you will, is to start a seismic survey in the third quarter of this year. And to that end, we've now appointed a seismic acquisition company, a company by the name of Velsize. Velsize is highly experienced in seismic acquisition and seismic, for those who aren't as familiar with the process, really just uses sound waves to give either a two-dimensional or three-dimensional picture of the subsurface geology. And in our case, we're going to focus our seismic, our two-dimensional seismic in this case, we're going to focus it on the coal at about 500 metres. Now, that coal imaging, as it's called, enhanced imaging with this seismic survey will allow the reserve certifier to gain greater knowledge and greater confidence in the subsurface. And all going according to plan, that should increase their ability to issue us with additional independently certified reserves, and that adds value to the company. So the seismic survey is very important. Velsize, as we touched on, has now been appointed, and they have local experience or specific experience in CBM with acquisition of seismic data in Queensland, and they're using what they referred to as their EnviroVibe acquisition source technology, which is really just an environmentally friendly way of getting the acoustic signal into the ground and back to the surface to acquire the data, which is then processed, and the interpreters review that for coal continuity.
Yeah, and so, you know, ideally, I mean, I don't know if you have an answer to this. I don't know if it's a stupid question, really, but what kind of size, you know, reserves or resources do you require then?
It's a very good question, because two aspects to adding value and wealth for our shareholders, because it enhances the company as such, and also allows us to do external deals, and that is reserves and getting a power into the grid, which results in cash flow. So just on the reserves are very important. We have about 250 billion cubic feet of 3P reserves already certified, and the objective is to not only increase that so-called 3P, but to migrate some of that 3P over into the 2P category. Mm-hmm. And 2P is basically worth more than 3P, so the more we can migrate, the more it's worth for the company, and our share price should respond accordingly. So the seismic is the first phase this year of the objective to increase reserves and therefore a wealth for shareholders, and that further underpins and supports our gas to power project.
Yeah, because I mean, it's worth pointing out you've got upstream and downstream, and of course the upstream there, the gas reserves is 100% yours, isn't it? Where as a downstream there with the power project, up to 50% is yours. Is that right?
That's correct. And the other 50% of the downstream or power project is owned by our downstream power developers, Independent Power Corp out of the UK.
Okay.
Now, in relation to reserves as well, and that 100% ownership, as you correctly pointed out, Justin, we also have an even larger amount, a very, very significant amount of what's termed contingent resources, which is the next independently certified category up from reserves, and that's some 3,000. A billion cubic feet. So we have a really an enormous gas position, both contingent resources and moving into reserves, that we would be aiming to enhance as a part of this project this year.
Okay, and once the seismic survey starts, how long does it take from then, from day one, till you get the report back, Tony?
Well, the very first part of the process, well, it's really starting on the ground now, which is surveying the lines, Justin, and we started out thinking we would do under 200 kilometres. We've now boosted that to about 250 because we see new potential reserve areas which we'd like to investigate with this seismic survey. And indeed, if the results go our way, that again will further enhance resources and reserves. So when the actual acquisition equipment gets on the ground and we start the survey, the first thing we'll do is run some test data, and that'll effectively tell us just how much energy we have to put into the ground to get a good signal back. And at that point in time, we'll be fairly confident that we can achieve the objective. Then we go through with the acquisition after tweaking that acquisition parameters on the ground. And we're getting data back all the time, getting what's called raw data back, which can be a field processed and to give us an indicative feedback on what the coal is looking like at depth. And then a more formal processing, we'll say acquisition will take progressively about a month, but data's coming in all the time. As you finish your line, you can actually process it. But if it was all done sequentially, Justin, it would be about 4 weeks for the acquisition and about 2 weeks for processing, give or take a bit.
Okay, all right. And two other quick things. How is the request for proposal going with the government? Because you've been a request proposal for 100 megawatt power station. And also one other thing, you've said in the RNS, you're also pursuing other gas offtake opportunities. So first and foremost, the request for proposal, how's it going?
Well, it's going very, very, very well. And as you can imagine, there's a quite a large team working on this, particularly engineers, costings, and looking at where equipment and people will come from to fulfil the objectives of the development project. So all that will come together in a feasibility study for the upstream part of the project, and also we're getting additional information on the transport mechanism and cost of generation, etc. All of that will go into the RFP when we lodge that, the request for proposal reply, which is due in July, and we're on track with that. In that process of developing a feasibility study for the initial power into the grid, now we've always said that our objective will be to get up to 10 megawatts into the grid, because once we're into the grid, we can then expand in a much more low-risk manner, access to additional capital at a lower price, and completely de-risk virtually completely de-risk the downstream part of the project. And so that's still the objective, to get up to 10 megawatts into the grid, leading to, if we're awarded the full 100 megawatts, it will be leading towards 100 megawatts. So that's the plan. But also we see, that's plan A, if you will, but we also see some parallel streams that are coming out of this engineering feasibility study work. And we've rediscovered via that process the fact that we can transport some volume of gas and turn it into power, or other ways of helping the people of Botswana with their energy needs, compressed natural gas. Now, it's something we explored a couple of years ago. We're really revisiting that concept as we look at the first stage development of the field in the coming months and a couple of years.
Marvellous. Okay, Tony, well, listen, I think you've covered off a lot of detail there. And anyone listening who likes the sound of this and the potential that it could bring to them, then and they're not following you on Vox Markets and they're thinking about hitting that follow button, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Absolutely. Well, reason number one is that Tulu has an enormous quantity of independently certified gas in Botswana, up to 3 billion cubic feet 3C, as well as independently certified reserves. And we have a market that is really just crying out for new sources of electricity. And regionally, I said it's absolutely huge. Just in the Southern African power pool, it's also enormous. They're about 8 gigawatts short, or 8,000 megawatts. Second reason is that Talao has the experience to make this happen and the experienced partners to make this happen. So it requires both the resource and the people, and we have the experienced people. And the third point will be that Talao has all the key fundamentals in place to be a multiple, in my opinion, of the current share price in the not-too-distant future based on continued de-risking, Justin.
Excellent stuff. Good to chat to you, Tony, and hopefully speak again soon.
Very good. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast is Kieran Mazaria, CEO of Cadence. That's KDNC. Kieran, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks. Good to speak to you again, Justin.
Yeah, now you've just had your results out for the year ended the 31st of December 2016, and we'll get into the highlights of that in a bit. But for people listening right now who are not quite aware of what you do, could you explain Cadence and what the business is all about, please, Kieran?
Yeah, absolutely. So Cadence is an investment company. We invest and take strategic and cornerstone investments within the critical metal sector. That's being the sector that's going to supply the electric vehicle market going forward, principally focused on lithium, but also looking at other assets that will form part of that supply chain. And we have invested in 6 assets around the world, both at the JV level and an equity level. Our 2 principal ones are the Sinovec lithium deposit in Czech Republic and the Sonora lithium project in Mexico, in which we have a joint venture and have an equity shareholding. We tend to be the largest shareholder, an active participant with management, and try to help them along the way to deliver value to us and their shareholders.
Yeah, and do you know, interesting piece there from the chairman in your final results about those 2 main assets there in Mexico and Czech Republic. So your 2 main investments says that joint ventures are targeting to produce in aggregate around 55,000 tons of battery-grade lithium carbonate, which, based on analyst predictions, could represent a very significant 7 to 10% of the world supply in 2025. That's an amazing stat, isn't it?
That, yes, it is. And I think that's the key point. You know, we have to look for assets that are large scale, you know, have associated cost. They're on the lower cost quartile of the cost curve. And it's really good to be involved in these 2 assets, which are, you know, they're huge assets. But, you know, the Sonora's got 7 million tons and the Sinovec's got 7 million tons of lithium carbonate within them. I mean, those 2 are some of the largest, if not the largest, lithium carbonate, hard rock lithium carbonate deposits in the world. So it's great to have been involved with this from the ground up, from their inception when they were, you know, 700,000 tons or pre-resource, and to see them coming to fruition. As you said, you know, from 2019 onwards, when they look to look, certainly the Sonora project looks to be in production.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, if you can top that, give us some of the highlights, if you could, Kieran, from the results.
Well, absolutely, yeah. So the main point is that we, you know, on a sort of mark-to-market basis, because we've got equity with the largest holders in both several projects, including the Auroch Minerals project in Namibia and Portugal, the MacArthur Minerals lithium deposits, which are in Australia and Nevada, and as I've just said, the Bacanora deposit in Sonora Lithium province, the Sonora province, and the Sinovec province. Now, they're all listed entities, and we're the largest shareholder in all of them, and that has delivered some excellent returns. So, you know, to date, since we've been invested in these various assets. We performed about 104% return, and more importantly, specifically this year, and particularly because of the performance of European Metals Holdings, that has delivered us, a £2.4 million operating profit, as opposed to just under £200,000 profit in the year beforehand. So that mark-to-market valuation reflecting the fundamentals has delivered a profit for us, a quite substantial profit for us. And when I talk about the fundamentals, those two assets have really progressed up the value chain. The Sonora project has produced a pre-feasibility study. It's produced a pre-feasibility study which shows that it to be in the lower half of the cost production curve. And as we have a JV in there, the valuation is not only based on just our mark-to-market valuation, but it's also based on, the JV interest, because they'll be mining around 17% of the mine life from that joint venture area. So we get the profit from that. And we did a matrix in the annual accounts where we showed that, using about $9,000 a ton and varying costs from $3,000 to $4,500 a ton, the potential NPV returns on Cadence's joint venture and indirect equity stake would give us about an NPV of between $328 million over the life of mine to $232 million. So it's plenty of upside there on the Bacanora project. And of course, it really depends on where those costs come in. So, it could be as high as that, but I think probably it will be around the 296 to 264 based on $9,000 a ton of lithium carbonate, the price of lithium carbonate. So that's done really well. And after the year end, we had the Sinovec lithium deposit, which came out again with a really good PFS. And that PFS showed that it had a lower, cost was about $3,400 a ton. Again, that's the lower half of the cost curve. NPV of $540 million, of which we're 20% of that. So potentially we get 20% of that NPV. And a capital cost of $400 million and a production of, 20,000 tons a year. So both of those assets have really progressed well. They're large assets, low cost, and there's potential upside there, both on the equity side and on the joint venture side with the Sonora Lithium project. And the other projects that we have also progressed well fundamentally. The Yangibana project is still undergoing its bankable feasibility study, which we hope to see some results this year. MacArthur Minerals has progressed well, and we're really excited about the project in Namibia with Auroch Minerals and the drilling that's ongoing right now on a copper deposit in Portugal. It's so called in the land of the giants. So we really look forward to seeing the results from that. So overall, these fundamental assets have progressed well. That's reflected well on our P&L and balance sheet. We've got net assets around $25 million, including our liability of $10 million on our loan note. And, we've got about £4 million in the bank. So retrospectively, it's all done really well. And it's now what happens going forward. And I think, we've outlined a really clear strategy of what we want to do. And that's for us is to move forward with a similar strategy, but focusing on other critical elements, and also to focus on other, on maybe not public assets, publicly listed assets.
Okay, well, Kieran, if someone's listening right now and they like the space you're in and what you're doing, but are not following you, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on the odd page, please.
Right, so the reasons to follow us, first of all, we are, in a market that is opaque, i.e. the lithium market and the critical metals market. We're a company that cuts through and sorts the wheat from the chaff and has exposure to multiple assets across the board. Secondly, these assets have performed incredibly well, and even if you were to create a proxy sort of lithium index, as we've seen from our presentations beforehand, our assets have performed and exceeded those quite considerably. So, we have a team of people that are able to identify assets that will perform well and have performed well and to date have delivered excellent value to the company. We intend to replicate that again and continue to replicate that going forward and hopefully deliver the similar returns that we've seen to date.
Excellent. And because you have several investments and JVs, there's never a lack of news flow, is there?
No, I think someone quoted that we had about 11 news releases in May alone. So there is never a lack of news flow.
Yeah, that's good.
I think that's important.
Yeah, exactly. But especially on AIM, because I mean, you know, you get a lot of people that, you know, that are short-term traders on AIM, and if they get no news for like a month, they're out, or even less than that, you know? Hang on, there's plenty of news flow coming your way as far as Cadence is concerned. Kieran, thanks very much, and hopefully speak again very soon.
Yeah, I'll speak again too. Look forward to speaking to you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. John, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. It's great to be on again.
Excellent stuff. All right, so I know you got your views and over a lot of stocks there, and research on all the stocks. What are you looking at the moment? What's worth talking about?
Well, we've just been writing on Gemfields.
Yeah.
Very interesting company. They produce emeralds and rubies, emeralds in Zambia and rubies in Mozambique, and they do that very well. They've got two very well-established mines there. They make very good money out of of developing and running the markets, the auctions for emeralds and rubies. Although they're separate commodities, but they're in the same kind of sector.
Yeah.
And they've continued to build that business over the years. And suddenly they get this surprise bid to take over the business by a private equity group called Pallinghurst. Now, Pallinghurst have always been there in the background. They effectively helped to give birth to this company. They set it on its way. They listed it in the stock market. They then sold a brand called Fabergé into Gemfields for $90 million some years ago in 2012. And suddenly, now they want to buy the business back, the whole business, for about 200 and something million. There's no premium being offered. They say they've got agreement and acceptance from something over 70% of the shareholders. So they think it's a done deal. And actually, the directors have come out today and they said, well, no, this is derisory. This undervalues the business. This isn't right. And we agree with the directors there, the, shall we say, the independent directors. We think that investors should stand up for their rights. We think that what Pallinghurst might do is rip out the Fabergé business and sell it off for maybe something over 100 million. You know, they're not doing this because they're trying to help everybody. They're doing this because they think they're going to make some money out of it. They're going to either... I think the suggestion is they're going to put some more businesses into Gemfields, but that's by the by, because that's not going to help the rest of the investors here. So our view is, you know, stand up for your rights. Make your, if you're a Gemfields shareholder, make your views known. It's not right to be bought out at no premium. And that's just not right. That's just not right.
Yeah. Strong words from the committee there. Like you said, derisory, undervalues the business. But you got to say they're probably jumping in right now while the share price is low, aren't they? Because I look at the share price back in July last year, it was at this level, which was about 30 odd pence, low 30s.
Yeah.
Went up to sort of 56 pence start of the year, pretty much, and now it's come back down to like 34 pence. So maybe they're just trying to, you know, to take advantage of that, aren't they, by the looks of it?
It's opportunist, and it is significantly undervalued. And I think they could pay for half of the deal just by selling the Fabergé brand on again. So you know, they've effectively robbed Peter to pay Paul. They've taken money from Gemfields' mining operations, has been going into the Fabergé brand year after year after year, and developing value within that, but value that hasn't really been easy for the stock market to recognise. So, whereas I think a private equity group will just take that and realise it.
Yeah, okay. Anything else you're looking at, John, worth a mention?
Well, in the back of my mind is Bushveld Minerals, which I love as a company. They're producing vanadium in South Africa. They acquired a set of assets, the Vametco assets, for very little money. In fact, the cash flow from those assets will pay for the acquisition within months. So it's a very sweet deal. And I think I expect earnings from Bushveld to truly exceed forecasts and I think exceed most people's expectations, and that I think is a good thing. The share, there's been no news for a little while. The shares have drifted a bit, and I think this is an opportunity.
Yeah, they did a sort of 400% rise in a couple of months, didn't they? And so now they're just consolidating around 8p by the looks of it. But
exactly.
Like I said, this is often the time when there's no news, you know, on AIM especially, when investors, a lot of investors or traders, short term, you know, their patience wears out, and then the share price drops off a bit. But it's almost like this is the time to do research on companies when there's not a lot of news around, isn't there? You know.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's always hard buying something that's going down, but really you should be buying low and selling high and not the other way around. And everybody at heart is a momentum trader. We all love to buy things when they're going up.
Yeah.
But in reality, if you really have faith in a stock and you think it's going to outperform, buy it as it's going down.
Yeah, it's the oldest adage in investing, isn't it? Buy low, sell high. But it's often harder than you think, because as you say, emotion gets involved, and it's psychologically, like you say, it's very hard to buy when a stock price is going down, because you worry about eroding your investment straight away. But like I said, buy low, sell high. It sounds simple. It's often not. Once you've got that sussed, I think you're a good investor.
Exactly.
Marvelous, John. Thanks very much for that. Speak next week.
Yep, Will. Thanks very much.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were at 5, UK Oil and Gas, that's UKOG. At 4, Georgian Mining Corporation, GEO. At 3, new entry, at 3, Dragonfly Investments. I haven't really got this chart thing down, have I? Dragonfly Investments, DRG. At 2, it was there yesterday as well. I did a blog on them on the weekend. It's Strat Aero. That's AERODISCO. It'd be cracking if there was a company with a ticker DSCO, wouldn't it? Well, I don't know if it would be cracking. Depends what they do, of course, what their actual business is. At 1, I think it was 2 days on a trot, I think. It's Echo Energy, ECHO. Most followed company in the last 24 hours on Vox. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as such. At 5, Georgian Mining Corporation, GEO. That's Holdings and Company. At 4, Katoro Gold, that's KAT. Work on the Imuru Gold Project commences. At 3, Sirius Petroleum, yesterday. Late morning. Holdings and Company. At 2, Horizonte Minerals, HZM. We covered the chart with Nicola earlier on the podcast. High-grade nickel results trial excavation site. And at 1, I just spoke to Tony Gilby, the MD of Talao Energy. Update on seismic survey was the most liked RNS released via the app this morning on the website. And people clicked on it, give it the thumbs up. And if you do see an RNS you'd like or dislike, please do that in the morning. It's on the app. It's free to download. Why not get it? Go to voxmarkets.co.uk. /app, that's APP for Android or iPhone, and then you just add companies to your watch list and you'll receive RNSs on those companies via notification free to the front screen of your phone whenever that company releases an RNS or RNS reach. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.